Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to the 99th episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me as always is Fred Moreland, who is panicking about television ratings. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm going to get canceled. And yeah. Now the Joe Lanza way.
Well, let's get canceled in that way here. Let's start the conversation about these ratings. So let's just present the facts as we know them, okay? 502,000 viewers. Lowest for a non-displaced Dynamite. So they've had, I believe, two displaced Dynamites, maybe more, but they've never had this low of a viewership on Wednesday nights. A 0.16, I think it was in the demo.
That's bad.
Very bad. We do know that there was not any Stanley Cup final coverage, no NBA final coverage, but there was Olympic swimming trials, which have been doing really good numbers on NBC. They were number one on network television, and the College World Series, number one on cable, doing almost 1.8 million viewers. And I think like a 1.4. No, that's not right.
So that can't be right. That's really high.
They did a bonkers good 18 to 49. I'll have to look it up.
Okay.
But the one interesting part that's going to make this whole conversation really weird, Fred, they were third on the night on cable.
Yeah.
What do we make of this?
What I make of it is we got to find a new promotion to talk about, because obviously we're dead. We're canceled. I'm going to be homeless. I will no longer make my my tens of podcast dollars. And looks like the College World Series is 0.42 in that key demo.
Yeah. I think I was trying to say 1.42. That's probably, I just missed one number.
But yeah, that they definitely had a pretty big dip. It is was a 26.3% drop in overall viewers from last week. The demo was down 30.4% from last week. It was the lowest either for a Wednesday night. So I don't know. You pointed out to me last week, I think, a Dave tweet, Mr. Dave Meltzer, of course, this past Wednesday, so 2 days ago, which feels like a week ago.
I know.
2019, TBS and TNT were in 91 million homes, and now they're in just over 70 million. And he said that the drop in 18 to 49 homes is even more significant. So now, is that why the AEW ratings were down this Wednesday? No, but I thought it was very interesting, and I wanted to mention that, so I'm just putting them together. Now, what does this mean? And frankly, my answer is this. I don't think anyone fucking knows. I think the doomsayers that are desperate to find, you know, anything that makes them right, the Eric Bischoff, et cetera, of the world, are going to cling to this as evidence that they've been right all along. kind of makes one question, you know, if they were right all along, why did this just now happen? But, you know, regardless. Yeah, I think the it's going to be interesting to see what next week is. Now, this fell on Juneteenth. I don't think that there's any real evidence that that's like a ratings killer of a night yet.
There's not also not evidence that it's not a ratings killer. Like Juneteenth is,
as a federal holiday, is pretty new.
It's a very weird day when it comes to discussing television ratings, because as you said, it's very new as a federal holiday. It is not a new holiday, but mm-hmm. I'm going to be real with you. I had never heard of Juneteenth until like 3-4 years ago. I grew up in the heart of the Midwest, Minnesota. I lived in North and South Dakota for short stints. Like, I had never heard of Juneteenth. And mm-hmm. I remember Joe Lanza listening to the flagship from yesterday, talked about how he had moved down to Texas. I think he said he's moved down to Texas somewhere around like 2010, 2011. I may have my years slightly off, but he said it's been celebrated down there ever since he moved there. So as like a national thing, it's become more of a thing. Cause like I said, never heard of it in Minnesota until a few years ago.
Yeah. And that's a failing, not it's on the holiday.
Failing of a lot of things, but it's, unfortunately, that's just the reality of it. I mm-hmm. was never educated about it and never heard about it for, I mean, we could find multiple reasons for that, but I think that's an important thing when having this conversation, when we're talking about is Juneteenth a ratings mover? Because if it's been celebrated in the South for a long time, which, you know, I'm led to believe that it has been, and Fred, you might be able to corroborate living in Kentucky.
I live in I'll tell you, I grew up in West Virginia, in a very white portion of West Virginia, and it was not something I was aware of before it became a thing federally a couple years ago, more or less.
Maybe so we're in the same boat. That.
So yeah, no, I didn't have a non-white classmate until the fifth grade because of where I grew up. So I don't know. I don't have any evidence right now that is going to be like the source of just completely dead ratings, you know? So I wouldn't read much into it, that holiday is having a major effect. It'll be interesting to see what next week is. I think MJF is probably very unhappy. Do we have quarter hours? I'd love to see quarter hours. There is a story going on that... I just got a notification which distracted me and made my brain go completely smooth rather than just the usual now. I think it'll be very interesting to see what next week's number is. But there's a story that instead of the normal Big Bang or whatever the hell the lead in is currently, Big Bang Theory, they played the Black Panther instead, and that had a much lower rating than Big Bang Theory usually does. I still think that's kind of a weak excuse, you know, if just changing your lead in makes your ratings drop like a quarter, then, you know, you've got issues that I think, go beyond just the lead in. But I don't know, man, it's a weird number. We'll see what it is next week. It's, may mean nothing, it may mean a lot. I guess we will see. I don't think there's anything that has happened that would really explain such a precipitous drop in viewership on screen. I think the last few TVs have been solid. I may be a little lower on them than some people, actually, but I thought that like this was a 7 out of 10 Dynamite this week. Last week was like a 6 out of 10. I don't know. I don't see any like angles going on that are like big turnoffs to viewers. So it doesn't make much sense. So, but you're going to see the discourse is going to be god awful this week. It's just going to be the absolute worst. It's already started, and don't go on social media. That's just my advice, because it's the worst place in the world. I don't know. That's kind of where I am.
Yeah. It's so hard to really parse out a lot of these television ratings, because one thing with AEW, and we'll kind of start here and work our way through some stuff. One thing to AEW that we've known since the beginning, and credit to Joe Lanza for being the first to point this out, anytime there's something cultural happening, AEW fans flock to it and the ratings go down. And that's been very consistent over the course of its existence, which has been nearly 5 years. So you have that, and Juneteenth, you could consider a cultural event. You could also consider, Fred, the Kendrick Lamar Drake burial concert, which is one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life. Kendrick Lamar literally had Crips and Bloods holding hands dancing together on stage in Los Angeles. Crips and Bloods.
Everybody hate Drake.
United to hate on Drake. Just Drake. Absolutely incredible.
We all hate Drake.
Yeah. And you could consider both of those a cultural event for, I mean, it may be a loose term to call Juneteenth a cultural event, but you understand the general direction.
Yeah, I get what you're getting at. Yeah.
The one thing that's going to hold me back from really saying that these numbers were just atrocious and just calling them, I'm going to call them confusing, leaning bad. They were third on the night on cable. Third.
Mm-hmm. They were.
That's significantly good, no matter how you spin it. If people aren't watching TV, but you are third, you're still doing well. And 500, 2,000, and a 0.16 is bad based on historical Dynamite numbers. But you're also looking at it from nobody fucking watched cable. The Olympic trials have been doing really well, too, because you have women that are just like, I think it was what, the 400 meter fly, and I may have my event wrong, third place, like broke the old American record and won't get to go to the Olympics for it. Jeez. Third place, like it's been bonkers at Lucas Oil Stadium with how good these swimmers have been. So third place, I'm taking that as a win. I don't like the numbers otherwise, but
the conclusion I'm drawing here is that the AEW is not going to the Olympics.
Fred, that's tremendous. I will say that I think it's not numbers that you love, but you deal with it knowing that, you know what? I think you chalk it up to an anomaly. We were third on the night. There were cultural events happening. All of social media was talking about that Kendrick concert because he played the diss track 5 or 6 times in a row.
Yeah.
And he had literal Crips and Bloods together. So
DeMar DeRozan there hating on Drake,
which is incredible.
If you know, you know.
Yeah. The College World Series did 1.8 million viewers.
I have an idea. Why don't I look at, let's see if I can find Final Nationals. I'm gonna see if I can find something on this site. It's on programminginsider.com. It's what I'm using these. So I'm going to scroll back and find last Wednesday. Let's just see how the other stuff is doing.
Okay.
Wednesday ratings. ABC. Now, this was finals night 3, NBA finals night 3. So those are all super high. Okay, that's I don't get the ordering on this, but you know, I'll figure it out. It'll be fine. Okay, so that's the simulcast. All right, I've caught up. All right, so this week, the number one cable show in total viewers was, of course, the Baseball World Series, as we talked about, the College World Series. Men's college, even, I should say. 1.791. Last week, it was 0.682. So College World Series did very well. And then Expedition Unknown did 1.13, which, again, is higher than last week's cable high, which was the U.S. men's soccer team at 0.682. And then Dynamite at 502 this week. Last week, it was 0.681, of course. Let's go to... Maybe just no one was watching TV, and, you know, I don't know if we can attribute that to Juneteenth, that seems a little, you know, a little convenient, I guess, because MasterChef week over week actually gained on Fox like 70,000 viewers. Oh, the CW still exists. That's cute.
CW streaming, home of NWA.
CBS was up slightly, 3.624 from 3.587 with The Price is Right at 8. So they are up a little bit. ABC, they had the NBA, so that's obviously going to be much lower this week. I don't know. This could just be a really weird aberration. It could be really meaningful. But I don't have anything as far as like what the creative is in AEW to attribute it to. So that's where I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. So we'll start with it's weird and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, I think that's really the only thing that you can draw from it right now is that it's weird.
Yeah. Well, I am interested to see what next week is, you know, obviously that's going to be a big question.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Fred, I think we need to have a fun discussion today.
All right, sounds good.
We're going to take from our friends at Open the Voice Gate out here in this podcast network, Mike and Case. We're doing a project here that was spurned last year from one of the most atrocious things I've ever seen, a best wrestlers under 30 list that had some just, it was just so incredibly bad. So we decided to do our own. Anybody from Voice of Wrestling can contribute, which means you're getting a lot of diverse voices, diverse backgrounds and preferences. And we have until Sunday the 23rd to submit our ballots. Mine has already been submitted. I have a couple guys that I wish I could have had on there. One, I really hate that I don't have on there, but it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a good place for a discussion about some of these wrestlers. And it's a good exposure for those of you who maybe don't follow other promotions to, hey, they love this guy. Maybe we should go check it out. And listening to Mike and Case on the last Open the Voice Gate kind of opened my eyes to a couple Dragon Gate guys because I just don't watch enough Dragon Gate. But Fred, I think this is a fun topic. We talked about it last year. And I'm going to be real with you. Like, my ballot's done, and I think you might be surprised at my number one.
Okay.
Would you like to take a guess?
Well, MJF is the obvious. I mean, he finished first overall last year. So I would begin with him and go from there. So MJF?
My number one is still MJF. And okay. I think the big thing for me with MJF is he needs somebody to filter out his ideas. I referenced this to, I remember watching the Death of WCW documentary, like the 20-part or whatever on the WWE Network. And they talked about Vince Russo. And one of the things is Vince Russo is like, it's not like he only has bad ideas. He has a lot of really good ideas. But Vince McMahon was always there to filter out the crap. Once he got to WCW, he didn't have a filter. He didn't have somebody to filter things out for him. And I think that's what MJF needs. I think he needs somebody to really filter out all the crap. And he needs Tony Khan to be that guy, to be that barrier to prevent stuff like the Brochachos from ever happening again. I think if we can do that, you're still looking at an all-timer. He's, what, 27, 28 years old? The dog collar match is still one of the greatest things I've ever seen in pro wrestling. The Iron Man match was phenomenal. He's great. He delivers on the mic. He delivers in the ring. He's willing, as we saw with the Roosh match this past week, he's willing to get his ass absolutely whipped for the sake of professional wrestling. He's willing to do anything. This guy still has the ability to be an all-timer, and I really believe in him.
Yeah, I think he's, he's obviously tremendously talented. I voted him first last year, and I have not finalized my ballot yet, but I've got him first still. I think he's basically the closest thing wrestling has to a five-tool player as far as anyone under 30. Mm-hmm. I think he's very good in every aspect of the game. So, the biggest deal to me, I guess, is that, you know, I saw some people say that they wouldn't vote for MJF because of how bad the Bruciaccio line was and everything. And I get it. You know, I can point to all his skills and everything that he does do really well, which is seemingly almost everything. And you can point to, well, I hated watching AEW last year. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's fair. I think if it's just an analysis of his skills, though, I mean, I think he's better than, you know, the other people that one would have towards the top of their ballot. I just, I don't know. It's tough. It's tougher this year because of the negativity and the negative aspects of his title run and how AEW trended when he was on top. But also, you know, he's been saying, I mean, hell, still in the middle of it, frankly. He started saying a lot of the right things, you know, with, you know, this isn't, this, you know, got to restore the feeling it started with him and all this stuff. So, I don't know. I think it's really, really an interesting situation. But I got him first still. I mean, I just think that no one else really compares with him in terms of just all-around ability. And so I think that's what I don't really see a reason to change that. Who do you have number two?
Two was an interesting one for me. Last year, I believe my number two, if I'm remembering correctly, was Konosuke Takeshita. This year, it is not Takeshita. Mm-hmm. It is, and I'm just verifying real quick, Kaito Kiyomiya. Fuck, has he figured it out? He's figured it out. Noah built him up. They believed he was going to be the next ace of Noah. Mm-hmm. And they did everything they can to screw it up. Well, it seems to be working now. And his time with New Japan, his time with Dragon Gate, I think really built up a lot of that confidence. The match with Gabe Kidd, I still need to watch, has gotten rave reviews from everybody. And if he can just drop the Muto cosplay, I really think that this guy can be like a big time drawing ace for a decade. Kiyomiya is still stupid young. What is he, like 26, 27?
Something like that, yeah.
He's already, what, a three-time GHC champion? Like, that's bonkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he rules. I mean, I have not watched really much Noah this year just because I am behind on seemingly everything. But, I mean, even last year, you know, just even in what was creatively some really bad stuff for him, I think it was obvious that he was really good. And like fantastic really in the ring. If they just let him be Kaito Kiyomiya, you know, instead of Muto cosplay. And I think he's awesome. So I've got him second of mine. Looks like last year he was fourth. So even with all that bad booking, he was fourth. So let's see. Let's finish. What's the rest of your top five?
Three is Konosuke Takeshita. Four is Jack Perry.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
And five is Yuma Anzai from All Japan.
Okay. All right.
Takeshita, I think, is self-explanatory. The only one reason I dropped him down is I'm worried he's never going to become a big star in the United States because of how his booking has been so far in AEW. And I don't necessarily think it's Takeshita's fault, but his momentum just got completely stalled out. And there were rumors that he was hurt and they still kept wanting to have him on television. So, I mean, if those are true, then maybe we can have a little bit of a different discussion. But, like, just, he's still so good. He's been wrestling for a decade plus and he's under 30. He's great. Yuma Anzai, if you like, I know you've watched some All Japan. Mm-hmm. They have themselves the next Kento Miyahara. He's their next guy for a decade. And they did a great job with his ascension, winning the title. And I'm really excited to see what's in store for him moving forward. And then, look, Jack Perry had the switch turn on. And we are starting to see what I think Tony Khan always saw. He never really had that confidence with his character or with the mic in his hand. But holy shit, does he have it now? The second he went to New Japan with the scapegoat gimmick and his time away from AEW was career changing.
Yeah.
He looks like he could be a world champion now. Now, he doesn't necessarily have the body physique of like your traditional world champion, but this is 2024. I think that matters significantly less now than it did, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. Man, I've been really impressed with Jack Perry. When they pulled the mask off and that smirk, I bought in. He just gets it. He gets what his character is. He gets how to be a snarmy dick. And he's doing incredibly well. And the in-ring was always good. Good to great. I mean, he didn't peak super high often, but he was also a very young wrestler. So you can, like, not everybody's Will Ospreay.
Mm-hmm.
But I really buy into Jack Perry.
Yeah, I think he's certainly looks like he's figured out how to present himself on TV. I'm still a little lower on him than you. I have him on my list, but I don't have him in my top 10. So, which is still, like, I just made a change on it, so I'm still a little flexible on it. But I can't really see the argument for him in the top 10, personally. My 3 through 5 are Yuma Anzai. I mean, we just talked about how he's been pushed to the top of All Japan. Looks like he's going to be a fixture there for 10, 15 years. And I think there's no reason to think he won't be successful there. I have Takeshita 4th. My reasoning being, you know, even if he doesn't ever really get that push in AEW, then he'll just go back to Japan and be a superstar in DDT. Like, that's his 4. So, he'll be okay. I'm not worried about that. And number 5 is Vikingo. Iho Del Vikingo. I just think he's a fantastic high flyer. Worst case scenario, he's a main eventer in Mexico for just like Takeshita 10, 15 years. So he'll be all right too. You want to go 6 through 10 on yours?
Yeah. I do want to say that WrestleNomics has the quarter hours out. The highest quarter hour was quarter hour 1, 586, and then 288,000 in the demo. That is a 0.22. And after that, no other quarter hour was above 0.2. So
fascinating.
Yep. Very, very interesting. 6 through 10. Let's go back to my list. 6 is Rhea Ripley. 7 is Shota Umino. 8, Fuminori Abe. 9, Daniel Garcia. 10, Tony Storm. It's like the Rhea Ripley one is difficult. She's not just over in WWE. She's very over. And she's still a tremendous worker. She could be the face of the company if they really wanted her to be.
Yeah,
I don't think they do.
Yeah, it's fascinating her because she is quite over. I think this is like the peak for her, honestly. And as you know, I think she's a good worker too. But you know, WWE, you're not really going to see that. Last year, I watched all her big matches, and outside of 1 4.5 star match, I had her get like 2 3.5s, and that was it. And that's a real flat record, you know. So I can't really put her that high personally. But I get it. I get it. Maybe I'm too low on her, but I'd like to see good matches from her. And modern WWE fans are hard for me to read. So.
Yeah. I'm still incredibly high in Shota Umino.
I still like it a lot. Yeah.
He's got little things to figure out, but I really do think he has it, and I'm excited to see how he continues to grow and develop and become that guy long term. Fuminori Abe, that dude just rules, and I can't believe he's in his 20s. He looks like he's 50.
I haven't watched enough of him. I've watched some of his stuff, but not enough to like get a good handle on him, and maybe I should.
But I mean, Takashi Sugera looked 50 at the age of 25 too. So,
I mean, Arn Anderson, right?
Oh, Arn Anderson at 27 looked like older than my dad does now, and my dad's almost 70.
Yeah. So, just some people got that face.
Daniel Garcia, self-explanatory. They can put the rocket pack on him at any time, and he's found a way to stay organically over with consistency despite the inconsistency with his booking. And then Tony Storm. Look, Timeless thing isn't necessarily for me, but it's like she is really, really good.
Yeah. I think that I like Tony a lot. I have her in my top 30. It won't be too far till we get to her. I think she's just really impressive in the ring. She's the best in-ring active worker, I think, that AEW has on the women's side. Slightly better than Willow, I think. Speaking of, I would have, you know, if Willow was 29 this year instead of 30, I would have had her
one,
possibly top five.
I would have had her like one or two. I love Willow.
Yeah, she's great. She really is. I wouldn't put her above Kaido, and I wouldn't put her above Anzai. Would I put her above Takeshita? I don't think I can do that, but I might have put her above Vikingo. I might have had her at five. All right, by 6 through 10. And this is where I'm very comfortable with my top five. 6 through 10, I'm pretty comfortable with, but I'm not 100% set on it. I could move it around a little bit. Sixth, I got Yuma Aoyagi for All Japan.
Okay.
Seven, I got Logan Paul. I didn't vote for him last year because I thought he'd just do WrestleMania and then go away. He didn't do that. He stuck around. He's more of a regular roster member than Roman Reigns. And he's really good at wrestling. Like, I'm not, you know, not a Logan Paul fanatic at all, but dude gets it. Like, he's a natural. And, this is a case where if I knew that he would be like a full timer for 10 years, he'd be higher. I think he's just way better than he should be, frankly, and very good. Eight, I got Mascara Dorada. I just think he's, again, destined for Lucha, fame, and is going to be a top guy down in Mexico for quite a while. And that's about where I cut off, like, the guaranteed big stars. I don't have any Dragon Gates in my top eight, which is very funny to say after listening to the Open the Voice Gate episode. I am not as high on Shun Skywalker. I've only watched Dragon Gate since last year. So this is, me being a dumb newbie to something versus, guys that live and breathe it, but I just, Shun Skywalker doesn't do it for me on that super high level. I have him in my top 30. Like, he's going to come up here a little bit, and I like other guys in, Dragon Gate too, but I just don't have any of them in my top 10. Nine for me is Kyle Fletcher. I think he's got the charisma, and I think he's got the skills. I get a little bit Will Ospreay off him. The association on screen obviously helps with that, but like, I get
helps that he looks like him too.
Yeah, I get the vibe off him that he's going to be just a superstar. So I got him there. And number 10 for me is Commander. He's out hurt right now. But when I voted in the FSM last year, I had him very, much higher than I expected. But I thought he had a ton of good matches. Let me pull up exactly where I had him. I had him 25th overall in the FSM 50 last year. And I just thought he had a damn good year. And, again, we can point to AEW being very bad at booking luchadors, especially this past year. The best job they're doing right now is Hechicero. And I like Hechicero a lot, but he wouldn't be my number one draft pick on their roster for luchador to push,
Mm-hmm.
But I think Commander is really good. My pronunciation is terrible today. I apologize to everyone putting up with their dumb show
today.
I'm from West Virginia. I'm just doing the best I can.
Country roads.
Come here, Commander. Get off that damn truck. Mascar Dorada, I ain't going to tell you again.
Tremendous.
So that's my top 10. My top 11 through 15 for me. Toni Storm. I'm thinking about maybe putting her over Commander. I could kind of going back and forth on that because I do think the she's got a touch of the MJF, bad booking, bad creative itis around her. But also, I think she's really talented in the ring. And also when she is on the mic and it's not just the gimmick, she, like, practically every time she talks, there's at least one line in there that I find incredibly witty and practically at a level that you rarely see. So I like that aspect of her a lot. So, and, I just had a revelation watching her like 2 or 3 weeks ago when she wrestled. I forget who it was. It wasn't much of a match. It was a squash, but she just looked so crisp doing her stuff that, she's great. 12 for me is Shota Umino. I think he's got a lot of tools. I think he's on the verge of putting it all together. Going back to the Kaito Kiyomiya discussion, we talk about cosplay wrestlers. I think that Shooter needs to figure that part of it out. And feel a little less like that, because it feels like he's doing 3 cosplays at once sometimes, and that's not great. 13 for me is Suzu Suzuki from Stardom. I just think she's tremendously talented. 14 and 15 are Dragon Gate guys, and the Open the Voice Gate guys will probably yell me for the order I have them in, but I got Madoka Kakuta 14. I just love him. I think he's awesome, great wrestler. And I got Shun Skywalker 15th. They are probably going to be appalled that I have them in that order and that I have Shun that low, but Shun doesn't connect with me like that. And I know I'm probably the high man on Kakuta, but at least outside of the Dragon Gate people, but I think he's awesome, so I like Kakuta a lot. So,
yeah. All right. My 11 through 15, the Open the Voice Gate guys will not be mad at me because 11 is Shun Skywalker. 12, Stardom's Utami Hayashishida. Every time I watch that woman wrestle, she's bonkers. She's so good.
Yeah, she's great.
She's so good. 13, and this was a tough one for me because he was in my top 5 last year, El Hijo del Vikingo. I'm worried that the ACL injury is going to hinder him long term. I'm worried about it. Genuinely worried about it.
We'll see when he comes back and everything. I've got someone that I'll mention in the next batch that is out injured that I have a similar concern about. Mm-hmm. I look at Rey Mysterio, who doesn't have ligaments. I think they've all left his body, and he until like a few years ago, like he was still a damn good wrestler, and he's pretty good now, but he's obviously not what he was. But there was the whole like his career should have ended in 1998 thing, right? And he just had a fantastic run in the aughts considering the limitations of where he was and everything. So I just think it's obvious that he's I believe the Vikingo will be fine with a torn ACL. If it was a more dramatic injury of some sort, then I'd be with you. But I think he'll be fine. He's young enough to where I don't think it would be an issue.
Yeah, you might be right. I just don't know, and that unknown just had me push him down a little bit. Plus, in the United States, he's not really booked poorly, but he's not exactly booked well either. Because he's still got that AAA affiliation. He's not quite
a full AEW talent. AEW uses him as like, hey, look at this guy, then he's going to lose. Which, that's fine, but I think he's too good for that spot,
Yeah. 14, Kyle Fletcher. AEW can just pull the trigger on him whenever they want, and they'll have a star. They don't have to do it right now. He's got time, but they can do it. And then 15, Yume Aoyagi. I'm not as high on him as Anzai for obvious reasons, but God, he's good too, man.
He is. I had him. Where did I had him in 6. I had him 9th in my FSM 50 last year. So I thought he had a tremendous in your in ring year. So
yeah. Go ahead, Fred, and your 16 to 20.
All right, the back half is where I'm kind of a little iffy on things, but maybe talking through it will make it better. 16, I got Jamie Hayter. I'm concerned about the injury, the fact we haven't heard anything from her at all for a year, and the fact that she wasn't mentioned in the Owen bracket at all.
I'm not, because I really have no idea what to make of it. How severe was the injury, and how much of it is just Tony not ready to have another women's program?
Maybe she's coming back like right after Forbidden Door. I don't know. But the fact we haven't heard anything on that front makes me worry enough where I'm going to drop her down this far. 17 for me is Mizuki. I think she's fantastic in Tokyo Joshi Pro. Was really impressed with her 2023. 18 is Daniel Garcia. You know, I pretty much am where you are with him. So I'm not going to repeat that. 19 for me is Jack Perry. I still have a few questions about him. I mean, I think that it seems like he's really figured out the charisma side of things. But I just, I don't know. You know, I'd like to, I'm 6 months away from moving him up, I think, or even 3 months away. I'd like to see him get a really big push and some regular ring time just to flex where he is.
How does it feel knowing that you're such a coward with Jack Perry? How does that make you feel?
I mean, it's my day-to-day life, so what can I say? You know, I'm constantly afraid of Jack Perry at all times. Check the back seat for him every day. And then 20 is a Bandido. I mean, he was already super over, for a guy outside of AEW or WWE prior to the foundation of AEW. He seems like a guy that has a ton of charisma that can easily get over. Again, the injury is concerning. And then you get the question of, okay, how is AEW going to book him? You know, because again, they really struggle with Mexican guys. It's not great.
Who's your 20? I missed the name.
Bandido.
Okay. Spoiler, Bandito's not on my list.
I get it, because he's been out so long.
It's the injuries, man. Just completely derailed.
I think he'll still be great when he gets healthy, but
I think it can be, but I'm less convinced.
Yeah, trust me, I get it, because the bottom of the list is getting really compressed for me after. And maybe in a different, you know, setup for me, I'd have them out of it. But go ahead with yours.
All right. 16, the prodigy Nick Wayne.
Ooh, I forgot about Nick Wayne. I don't know where we put him.
In 2-3 years, he could easily be at one.
Yeah,
but he's 18 years old. He's already been on national television almost an entire year with his hot mom. That part.
Will you see that T-shirt?
Oh, that T-shirt's so bad. I kind of want to buy it
with the like specifically defined butt on Nick Wayne's mom, which is just really off-putting.
It's so bad, but it's so great.
Anyone that buys that needs to be put on like a federal list.
Oh no, you buy it and you wear it around the house, but you don't ever go out in public.
Then you go to prison.
Yeah.
In a just world.
17 is Mascara Dorada. I'm a big fan, but there's still so many botches, and I know he's just green and he's
a baby.
The high end stuff is so good, but I just need to continue to see him clean up a little bit before I move him up higher on the list. 18. I put Atlantis Jr. on there. We don't really know how old he is, but for this exercise, he is eligible. I think he's great, and I think he's only going to continue to get better. He is really starting to own the ring down in Mexico, and I've just been really impressed every time I've seen him. I think eventually I hope he has a mask match with his dad, Atlantis.
Yeah.
And I think there's a ton of potential there. 19, the aforementioned Jamie Hayter. And 20, Madoka Kakuta from Dragon Gate.
My big dunk boy. he and Mama Wayne can form a stable. That's an ass promotion, by the way. I don't know if anyone's ever really discussed that, Dragon Gate. All right. My 21 through 25. I respect women in this batch. 21 is Utami Hayashishita.
Wow, you're really low on her. How dare you?
It's tough. It really is a tough list to do. I know you're saying that facetiously, but I think she's obviously great.
It's a very difficult list.
Yeah, 22 is Rhea Ripley. She's obviously super over. Maybe I'm 10 spots low on her, but that's just my take on her. 23 is Mao from DDT.
He's under 30.
I know, right?
What?
I'm pretty sure he is. Let me double check that just so I don't have egg in my face when I
Have you submitted it yet?
I have not.
He's 27. Fuck off. That's nuts.
You know who's also 27? I just had to check her age to make sure. Is Riho.
Oh, that makes sense. She started wrestling at 12.
Well, I guess Mao did too. When did you debut, Mao? The best part of a podcast is when you look up information live on air and no one stopped the show.
Everybody loves it.
Yeah. We all Google together. You know, 2015.
While we Google things, that's a perfect time to go to our Red Circle page and give us a donation for being such good podcasters.
yeah, he debuted in 2015. So, okay, what was I going to... Miyu Yamashita at 24. I like her, but I see enough holes with her. I worry about her charisma level as like a top Joshi star. And every time she comes to the States, she like loses something. It's crazy how that works.
Yamashita's got the snarl, man. I love the snarl.
Yeah, she does. Oh. But then she comes to work in the States and has like a 3-star match every time. Like, which is nice, but it's like Lady J Lethal in terms of production. It's crazy. Like she comes on Dynamite, and you're like, oh man, she's really good in Tokyo Joshi Pro. I can't wait to see what she does with Thunder Rosa and just like lays an egg.
Lady J Lethal is so good. I think she's getting too much of the blame based on how you're portraying the conversation. Because
I was going to say like part of that is probably Rosa's injury at the time, but but it's other appearances that she's made where I'm like, now granted she's working with like Jinai Kai, who is not exactly
woof
as good as healthy Thunder Rosa, but still, it's like you would hope for higher level matches in those circumstances.
Yeah.
25 for me. Miyu Watanabe, another Tokyo Joshi star. She is.
Is she in the Magical Sugar Rabbits or no?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Let me double check that. Back to the best part of no, that's Mizuki and Yuka Sakazaki.
Okay.
Miyu Watanabe wears the pink, and at WrestleMania weekend she broke the camera. I don't know if you remember that. She's really good, though. I think she's fantastic. She primarily tags with, I think it's Rika Tatsumi. Okay. Anyways, and that's my 25.
All right. 21. Luke Jacobs.
I haven't watched him at all, actually. I don't think so. I need to fix that, but I haven't yet.
I really think that Luke Jacobs can be the next big British star. He's awesome. 22, Kosei Fujita. Man, been really...
I'm like 1 year away from him, I think.
Been really impressed with him. The last... his best of Super Juniors, that was pretty good. And I think there's something there. I like that he's with TMDK. 23. This is a guy I think could be a future world champion.
Okay.
Drilla Maloney.
Okay.
He is like when obviously the first time you go to Japan, it's such a wild thing. It's such a wild place, and it's so different from anything you've ever experienced as a wrestler. And Maloney looked out of place the first time he was in Japan. No question about it. And you know what? That's okay. It's about how you respond and how you grow. My God, when I saw him come out, I think it was for Dominion, he owned everything. Maybe that was Dantaku. Whenever the last time I saw him was. And I'm just like, this guy looks like a star. He carries himself like a star. And I think he's going to be a star.
Yeah, my thing with him is I haven't got to Dominion yet, so I haven't seen anything that would put him over the top yet. But, you know, I could see him being on my list next year pretty easily.
I mean, I think he's going to be carried a little bit more by the charisma and that than he will the in-ring work. The in-ring work is good, but I don't think it's ever going to be spectacular.
Yeah.
Like, with any form of consistency. But, yeah, I do really like Drilla Maloney. 24, Azumi. I don't really have whole lot to say about her. She's just really good.
Oh, I got her in mind, so we're good.
25. I almost had him off the list, and I kind of wish I did, because I finished this list before I watched the Gabe Kidd match against Kaito Kiyomiya, and I don't have Gabe Kidd on here. And yeah. I really should have. I have Tyler Bate at 25.
Okay.
He's still a baby.
Yeah.
He hasn't been pushed at all. He's a WWE lifer. But man, I wish he would have never joined WWE and just stayed on the indies and then worked Japan. Man, you could be talking about Bate in a completely different light other than like, oh yeah, that guy still exists.
Yeah. I watched him a few times in my WWE catch up for this year, and like, he's still good, but like, he's obviously not getting those opportunities. So that's kind of,
he's probably never getting those opportunities, which is what sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my 21 to 25.
May I read you a comment from Cage Match, since we're just completely doing dumb stuff? You know,
sure.
This is for the most recent one for him in English from March 25th. This is from Damien. 4.0 on Tyler Bate, which is tied for the lowest rating on him. Genuinely horrible. I used to think he had some potential because he was fairly young, but he has actually been stagnant in most areas while declining in others. His in-ring work is worse, and his look is a choice. Let's be honest, Tyler Bate looks like a hobo in diapers. He can't talk nor act for shit, can't really work a gimmick, and he is tiny as fuck. He can do moves and sell decently, but that's always going for him. A lower mid-card act that gets a ton of TV time that much more talented people should be getting instead.
What? Oh, we're not
the other four. The other four submitted on him, which is very funny, is it's in German, but it's by Matt for Wrestling, so I'm not going to read it. But it was submitted on May 4th, 2015, when he was like 3 years into his career. It's very funny to rate a wrestler when they're like, how old was he then? Dang. I gotta do math now. He was 18. Being like, this guy sucks, and then never revisiting it. Good stuff. All right. 26 through 30, the last of my list. Starlight Kid is my 26. I love Starlight Kid. I think she's fantastic. I don't know why they push her like she does. She probably should realistically be off the list, because if she's getting pushed like this now, I don't know how she's going to get pushed, you know, in 10 years. Probably not well, if at all. But I think she's awesome, so I'm going to be stubborn. 27 is Azumi. 28 is Micah for Stardom. I think she's also quite good. 29 is Kota Minora from Dragon Gate. I know the Open the Voice Gate guys are very concerned about him, but I still see quite a bit of tools in him. And
that concern was about his Dreamgate run, right?
Yeah, it was, which apparently was not good. I started watching after that, I think. But I think he's still very talented. His push is up in the air, but they seem to, they could always just go for him again. So I don't know. And then I just made a change. 30 is Nick Wayne as of right now for me.
Good. Let's round this out. 26, Logan Paul. It's hard to have him higher because he's never going to be full time. But you have to have him on here because he's a prodigy.
Yeah.
And it really sucks that Logan Paul's a prodigy, because I don't want...
He's a big old dum-dum.
Yeah. 27, Starlight Kid. She's just good.
She's really good.
28, Ryohei Oiwa.
Okay.
Damn. Right. He's figuring things out in Noah, man. He really is. What a great excursion for Oyuwa. Like, awesome. 29, Bron Breakker.
Okay. All right. I actually thought about including him.
Look, I don't think he's ever going to be anything more than a souped up Goldberg, like just mm-hmm. a dumb jock doing dumb jock things. But he can win the world title being a dumb jock. And
I got to tell you, man, his tag team with Baron Corbin and NXT for the first couple months this year, it's really good. I like their stuff quite a bit.
I think there's a lot of potential there. I mean, he's the son of Rick Steiner. There's potential. 30, Commander. I worry long term about the size. Like, maybe I shouldn't worry about the size, but I do anyways, because let's just be real. This isn't Lucha. This is like, I'm kind of viewing it from like an American perspective.
Okay.
For the most part, with some of these really small guys, it's going to be really hard to stay that over at that size. But he's got the goods, man. He's doing like really revolutionary kind of stuff. Him and Vikingo. So that's my 30.
Because they're revolving when they fly through the air.
I wish I would have had Gabe Kidd on here.
Yeah, I could not find a spot for Gabe Kidd. I just dropped Yuki Yoshioka from Dragon Gate to put Nick Wayne on. One guy that Open the Voice Gate talked about that sticks out to me is Mochizuki Jr. And I know that he is the son of Masaki Mochizuki, and I know that he's really good. But I just have not seen him do enough yet. And now he's off doing an excursion, and I haven't seen anything from him in months. So I think I'll probably have him whenever he comes back. And, you know, once he's got like 3 to 6 good months in Dragon Gate where he's heavily pushed, I will probably have him very high. But I just want to see more from him, because what I saw him do in Dragon Gate, and I'm not watching every show, I'm just watching like the stuff that gets like 3.5 stars and higher on the, you know, the Voice of Wrestling page reviews that those guys are doing. It's like always trio stuff that he's like in, you know, and I know that, you know, it's good that they're constantly having him do stuff, but I just can't find that as justification to put him on this list over other people. So, who were some late cuts for you?
Gabe Kidd. That was probably the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
I had some others, like, let me kind of just scroll, because I don't have like all my notes in front. So, I like looking at other people's lists. I did think about like Zandakon Jr.
Okay. I've not seen enough of him to feel comfortable voting for him.
I think he needs to get out of Mexico and he's going to be a bigger star. I did consider Neon.
Okay. Again, I need to see more of his stuff, but I would not be shocked if he was on this for me next year.
Jackie Funky Kamei.
That's another guy that I think is very good, but he seems like a secondary guy in Dragon Gate right now, and was kind of last year too. So,
yeah, but Dragon Gate's weird like that.
Mm-hmm.
He could have the world title in 6 months, and I don't think anybody would be surprised. Like, that's just kind of how Dragon Gate books. Benkei won the Dream Gate, and then when he lost it, the night after, he lost like an opening tag match, like, and he was completely downcycled.
Yeah.
Like, Dragon Gate's just in their own little bubble. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that kind of genuinely.
No, they are. Yeah. That's where they are. It's fine.
I didn't have a lot of hard cuts. Like, there's a lot of good wrestlers. There's one that, somebody had on their list. Oh, Leo Rush was an interesting one.
I had him last year, but I Mariah just don't May. Know. Yeah, that was.
I'll be honest. I for some reason my brain thought she was 30, not because she looks 30, but mm-hmm. I don't know. My brain just kind of jumped there.
I don't think I can get her on this list, though. I think she's worthy of consideration for sure.
Yeah.
Master Watto was not on my list last year, but he had a fantastic Best of the Super Junior run, and then it feels like he's just done nothing since then.
You know why? He tore his ACL.
Oh, I forgot about that. Well, that's a pretty good reason to not be wrestling. Selfish of him, but... two WWE guys that I thought about in addition to Bron Breakker are Axiom and Nathan Frazier.
I just don't have any faith that they're going to get pushed at with any form of whatever in WWE.
I don't either, but there's always the possibility that they leave, and I think they're really good. They're a good NXT tag team. Let's see who else on my Maki Ito is a divisive figure, but I do think she's tremendously charismatic, and I think in Tokyo Joshi she's a pretty good worker. That she doesn't carry over.
She works well when she wants to, and I don't mean that as an insult. It's just because of the shtick.
She's Lady Minoru Suzuki in the States. You know, just like she mainly comes over here and just does shtick, but if she were to do an actual match, she'd be much better. Ryuki Honda from All Japan, I'd like to see more from him. Francesco Akira, I considered, just couldn't, you know, he'd be like 33rd or something.
If he wouldn't have gotten hurt during Best of Super Juniors, he probably makes the list.
Yeah. I mean, I think he'll bounce back just fine from that. He's not a guy like Vikingo where he depends so much on athleticism. I have like no concern with him as compared to with like minor concern with Vikingo. Dante Martin and Wheeler Yuta are both very good, worth mentioning. Natsupoi and Hazuki. I didn't have Atlantis Jr. He's another guy that like I see why he's good, but also want more output. I don't like Strong Machine J. He's apparently in that age range. I just have never been high on him. I like Hyo and Ishin more, but those guys are both off for me. And that's more or less like people I thought about. So.
Yeah. Fred, I think that's it for the show.
That's it.
Next week, episode 100, which we're going to celebrate with the Forbidden Door Heat Check. A lot of interesting things to talk about going into the co-promoted show, and we're going to talk about all the matches. We're going to talk about the booking of the card. We're going to talk about some of the intricacies behind it. And I think it's going to be a good show. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And with that said, like, comment, subscribe, do all the fun things, help us out. There is a donation link in our show notes if you want to give us a couple extra bucks and say, hey, you guys are great. Thank you. And if you want to say we're great and don't want to spend money, we love you just the same. Subscribe, throw a comment on the YouTube link, do all the fun things. Those all matter a lot. Until then, I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Take care, everybody.
Rest in peace, Willie Mays.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.